Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Chris, Purnell, Aki are here. How are you three doing?
Not bad. Inadequate.
I'd be better sleepy. If my AC worked while my internet worked.
Sleep.
Why are you sleepy, Chris?
Because I didn't sleep enough.
That's a good answer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
On I the kind board. Of half blame.
Ding, number one answer. No.
I partially blame myself, but I mostly blame the cats.
Always blaming the cats. What do they ever do to you?
Well, you know, cats. A sleeping human is like furniture, basically, so.
Oh, that's a good reason to blame the cats.
And always, something to swat at.
Yeah. Just any old thing. The cats don't really care for people sleeping.
No.
And yet, when the cat's sleeping, you know, and you wake them up, then they don't like it. Like, oh, I thought that's what we were doing.
No kidding.
Kitty.
Mm-hmm.
I don't own one, but I like when other people have them. That's fine by me.
That's okay. I got enough for both of us.
Out of curiosity, so what do you do when you go on your trips? Like, you went, when you were on that trip, you and Catherine both went. What do you do with your cats?
Well, we had, we have some neighbors that we cat sit for them. They cat sit for us. And they're around so often that, like, not neighbors really, but, like, former coworkers of hers. And, but, yeah, they've come around, like, every week, like, just to hang out. So, like, the cats know them. And,
that's awesome.
Yeah. And that's how it goes, you know, when you got a cat sitter person, it's like, it's kind of a mutual, if they're doing something, they can call us up, if we're doing something, we can call them up, and you go over and hang out at the other person's house without them in it, and hang out with the cats, take pictures of them, and send them to the person. That's very important. It's very important if you're cat sitting to take pictures of the cat being, like, happy and, you know, around, and send it to the person that you're cat sitting for.
I don't have to feel worried about it. Are my cats adjusting well to us not being home?
Yeah. You know, it's a relief to see a cat, like, enjoying your absence.
I know when I'm at MagFest, I like when Ashley sends me pictures of Coltrane and Simon and...
Yeah,
like your babies are okay, but they miss you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can say they miss you. I mean, it is probably true.
Hockey, what are you doing over there?
Nothing.
Apparently, it doesn't involve.
What are you watching over there?
a video game I was playing. I forgot that I wasn't muted.
Proud of you.
Yeah.
So, later on in the show, we should have our friend Dave K joining us, and we're going to have our usual batch of reviews. But in the past week, Chris, Purnell, did either of you guys luck out getting a Switch pre-order?
Kind of.
I didn't realize until I read news articles that it was apparently hard to get one, because it was probably the easiest pre-order I've had in a long time. But, I went to Target Circle app, logged in at midnight, went to the thing, put it in my cart. I mean, I think I had to do like reload like maybe two times for the checkout to clear, but other than that, I didn't have any issues.
I had some issues, basically trying to check out, and you know, it'd be sold out when, you know, by the time I would get my stuff entered.
Did you have to go to more than one store before you got something? Or was it the same
store? And then, you know, I went to Best Buy and, you know, waited in line and stuff. And when my turn came up, it's like then I put in my pre-order. And then they immediately sent me an email saying that the pre-order is canceled. Yeah. So what happened is that, you know, Catherine successfully got a pre-order, and then she just decided, well, you should have the pre-order. And so.
So were you both trying to get it initially for your, each for your own personal systems, but she gave you hers?
Yeah. I mean, and we don't both have to have one like day one or anything like that. In fact, I was kind of like, I don't even know if I need to get one right away. But yeah, she decided that I should get the successful pre-order.
I had that sort of feeling too, but I always tell myself it's better just to have the thing on pre-order if you can get it, and then just dump it later if it comes out and you've changed your mind at release date or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think
it's the other way around.
Yeah,
I don't think I've ever sold one like a flip like that. I've just returned it for MSRP.
Yeah, I don't flip stuff. So, yeah, I was just like, and there's no, you know, saying I don't want the next Nintendo system. It's like, that's ridiculous.
Who wants fun and enjoyment?
It's like the one thing I keep up with. So it's like, it's easy enough to just be like, yeah, next Nintendo. That's what I'm doing. Huh?
You mean you keep up with games in general or just Nintendo?
No, just Nintendo. I haven't had an Xbox. I haven't owned an Xbox since the original one. So.
Oh, wow. You didn't have the 360?
No. We have a 360 that I use, but it's not mine per se. I mean, it was given to us for free, so it's kind of like it's, you know, but it's not like I went out and bought one, you know.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You had it, but you didn't seek it.
Yeah. And it's not hooked up in my office either, so like that's, you know. But yeah, the only Nintendo I personally skipped was the Wii U, but even then, I have, you know, again, there's one here in the house. I did indeed buy it, but it was a gift for Catherine. But so we both have it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with PlayStation, I missed out on PS3 and technically 4, but I have PS4 games. And I have my own PS4. It's only because we got a second one, and then I just ended up with one. So, yeah. Nintendo's the only one I really kind of keep up with.
Yeah, not bad. I mean, if you're, even if it's just first-party stuff, that's the way to go.
Yeah. I'm like, kind of, like, perpetually retro, you know? It's like, even though I have, like, a crap ton of Switch games, it's just because they just keep coming out.
Yeah, I can relate to that. So yeah. Not anymore. They're not the train stop. I'm pretty sure Xenoblade was their grand finale as far as like games on Switch 1 are concerned.
That's probably true. You know they're going to come out with like a Kirby or something. That's like kind of. It's going to come out like, you know, a few Kirby months after. Games. Yeah.
I thought they always direct. They were still showing stuff coming out for the original Switch next year, even.
Yeah, and it's probably going to be like cross compatible or something like that. So
yeah, stuff like that is
have a Switch 2 upgrade pack in it.
Yeah,
that's a little different because he's going to have a Switch 2, so he's not going to have a reason to buy the Switch 1 version or whatever.
Right. Yeah,
I'm talking about Switch specific games. That kind. I'm pretty sure is done.
It would be funny if, for old time's sake, though, that they just threw out one more Kirby game, call it like Kirby Your Enthusiasm or something. just toss it out there and nobody buys it so that in a few years it's worth like a grand.
Buy it. Who am I kidding? I wouldn't buy it. I mean, because again, it wouldn't be just for the Switch, but if it were, I probably would because Kirby's where it's at.
How many people still remember? This is very recent, so, but how many people still remember that they're coming out with a Kirby's Air Riders?
Yeah, that's weird.
Oh, yeah, I remember doing another one of them. Direct.
Huh?
It's long overdue.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll say so. It's been over 20 years, right?
Oh, yeah. But I'm not knocking it. I mean, that's how I felt when, I guess it wasn't 20 years, but that's how I felt when they announced Rainbow Curse all those years. It was like, whoa, they're actually making a sequel to that. Wasn't expecting that to happen.
I didn't have the original, so
Pinball Land. Oh, the original was definitely better in my opinion, but they're both great games.
I forgot that they came out with Kirby Super Block Ball on the NSO, or if that's just what I've been playing on my SNES, like through a fan translation or something. But Kirby Super Block Ball is so good. And it never came out in the US initially.
It's really not gone wrong with pretty much any of the Kirby spinoffs. I'm trying to think of one that might have been a dud. Like not having it, it's not coming to mind at the moment.
Not a dud. I would not call it a dud, but I will say I find Kirby's Dream Course almost impossible to play.
Oh God, I love so Kirby's hard. Dream Course.
It's so hard.
It's definitely tough. It's not easy, I'll give you that. But I love that game. It's not bad either.
Yeah, it's not bad.
And the versus mode. Oh God, like the fact
that's
that
what I should try.
I still
yeah.
need to get off my butt. Yes, you do need to try. It's really good. Like. I never got off my lazy butt and downloaded the Game Grumps mod that they did where they created a bunch of new courses for the game because once you really got into it, you realize how quickly you ran through them all. You want more. It's a goddamn man. Kirby's Dream Course. You need to play it again, rather. It's not like you played it before. You didn't click with it so much. It's probably my one of my favorite Kirby spinoffs, if not my favorite Kirby spinoff game. So
right on.
Get up on that.
Well, I mean, I do own it, and I have played it a few times, so it's not out of the rotation or anything like that. I was surprised and taken aback a little at how difficult it was compared to, you know, other side games starring Kirby.
When you get those trick shots just right, power into the freaking wheel, and then the wheel runs to the tornado, and you turn to the tornado to make a hook turn into a ice ball that you slide down the hill onto a lake. Oh, jeez, it's so good.
It's like the opposite of a Rube Goldberg machine.
You create the Goldberg.
Yeah, you exactly.
You're the Rube!
Exactly, yeah. Like, instead of the machine being complicated, it's the ball itself.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning
Kirby
of the...
baseball. Where Kirby is the baseball.
Okay. Tell me more.
That's all I got so far, but
okay.
I think it'd be fun.
Just
Kirby baseball. I'm in. And again, I don't want to say I'm in, but I feel like they'd make it something I'd want to play. Like hearing it on the table, I'm like, it's not gonna be very fun. But they'd make it good.
Yeah.
And that's what matters. It's like, wow, how Laboratories, you've done it again.
I still have to get around to Kirby Forgotten World. I tried to play through all the Kirby games, and I got distracted somewhere in the DS era, and so I still got like half of them to go. But at least I played all the old ones now.
Yeah, I've never played through Forgotten Land either. I liked what I played of it, but you know, there's sidetracking games on this show and all that. It just doesn't happen. Like, oh. And then next thing you know, something else came out that superseded it. But one day I'll go back to it. I know what I'm not doing, though, buying that damn Switch 2 upgraded version of it.
Oh, I probably will.
Kirby, but it's been experience. I'd rather they let you pay a small fee and download and get the additional content they added for that version of it.
Speaking of games coming out, either you play the new Oblivion or Clair Obscur yet?
No.
I will say the Clair Obscur thing is, or Expedition 33, or as my one friend called it, Expedition 15, which is clever. That's like one of those games where it's the, Expedition 15, maybe it was. Anyways, it was one of those things where, like, you know, I had not heard about it until multiple people directly contacted me about it to ask if I had heard of it. And
I
was like,
that hasn't been on your radar.
Nothing's on my radar anymore. I haven't been buying any games this year. I didn't really know about it. And now I kind of know about it. Everybody is playing it. And apparently it's really good. But I'm not privy.
Oddly enough, in my case, I learned about it because of targeted advertising months ago. And it was just like a quick wheel of the battle system. And I was like, this game looks interesting. I'd have never heard of it. It must be like some like indie game, but I want it. So I put it on my list or whatever. And then out of nowhere, I started seeing people bring up like, oh, this game is going to be amazing. And I went to look at it on Steam. I was like, oh, it's on my wish list already. So I guess I'll just buy it on PS5 or whatever. And I did, and never made time because you know the deal.
Yeah. And the Oblivion remake, it would be weird if I was to get into a Elder Scrolls game on time, because I never, never do. I never have. I was 2 years late to Daggerfall. I didn't hit up Morrowind, even though I was well aware of it, until it was on Xbox, and then I bought an Xbox just to play Morrowind, and that's why I own an Xbox to this day. And Oblivion, I skipped entirely. Skyrim, I was at the E3 where they showed Skyrim. I was at the 2011 E3 in person. And yet, I bought it in 2017. It came out on Nintendo Switch because I didn't have a 360 and I didn't really want to get sucked in again. And then once I did get sucked in, of course, that happened in very predictably. And yeah, so I've always been late to them. Oh, and Arena, I played after all of those. Like, I played Arena. I played Arena like 2019-ish and then beat it. So it was like 6 years ago. So I was very late on that one. I was almost on time for Red Guard, which was a very obscure third-person side adventure that didn't have a character creator. You played as one guy who, you know, a Red Guard kind of pirate guy. And yeah, it was just all about exploring like Stroh's Mackay and like a lot of the areas of Red Guard, and very lore heavy, but a very clunky third person action game. So it both was and wasn't like typical Elder Scrolls, but I did play, I got that on a PC that could barely chug through part of it pretty soon after it came out.
I think you really should check out Clair Obscur. It's one of those weird games that if you look at Metacritic, like the user reviews right now, there are 90 negative user reviews. There's 63 mixed reviews. And then there's 4,458 positive reviews. It is sitting at 9.7 user review, which is just unheard of.
Oh, right on.
Also, Dave K is here. Welcome in, Dave. How are you doing?
How are you doing, guys? What's up?
What you eating today?
You talking about video games in here? Oh, man. Oh, yeah. I'm actually eating a salad.
Nice.
Which is pretty tasty, I gotta say. There's like salmon in here, there's chickpeas, there's all sorts of vegetables. I mean, obviously, because it's a salad. But, there's my cat. You can hear my cat complaining, probably.
Your cat's in the salad? Why is the cat in the salad?
Salmon mixed with lettuce.
I misunderstood the concept of a garnish until it was too late. Now I have to live with the consequences.
Oh, is it delicious at least?
A salad? Yeah, it's pretty good, actually.
The delicious consequences.
Nice.
What the hell are we talking about?
I was asking the guys if they played Clair Obscur, Expedition 33, or the new Oblivion remaster?
I have not played either of those, but I think I've heard the Oblivion remaster is decent to good. Mostly because the people I know who are playing it have only just started playing it. So
yeah.
I don't have a lot to contribute there. In fact, I have basically nothing to contribute there. I'm just talking to fill space.
That's what we always do on the show.
Always in between bites or salad.
No.
Yeah.
Our co-host, Phil Space, is here.
Phil Space definitely has a sort of morning zoo radio show.
Oh my god.
Good old
I wish I had sound effect things.
I mean, we have the soundboard.
There's a guy who has
I don't.
He needs to hook you up.
Fucking yes! Yeah!
There's one.
Yeah, see, the soundboard agrees.
For life.
There it is. That's there the stuff. He's that's fat. The stuff.
I think he's fat is probably my favorite.
But you don't have a sound.
Well, that, Chris? That in this one. That in this
no.
one.
No.
What? So anyway.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that is a good one.
What you've just heard, in case anyone is wondering what that was, is the sound of a man in his 40s stretching.
Working that on the ground.
That's how we all sound. It is embarrassing.
Is it? Damn yeah. right it is.
Then we, could have stretch. Big Adam doing a war cry.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good one.
Soundboard.
And if Franklin Delano Roosevelt was a professional wrestler, his music would sound something like.
Yeah.
All right. No one else is laughing at this. So I'm going to cut it off here.
Everyone else is like.
And, I mean, who can blame them?
I'm laughing really. In silence. I'm laughing in silence, you see.
That's job, almost worse than just not thinking it's funny.
The drug addicts are doing a great job.
Yeah.
Well, yes. Where would we as a nation be without our drug addicts?
Very true.
We'd have no music, art, or cinema. I can tell you that much.
Mm.
Yeah.
Probably wouldn't have any video game. Probably wouldn't have a lot of video games either.
True. Yeah. Yeah, that's your homework for the week. Check out Claire Obscure. Look up on it.
Oh, I thought you meant do drugs and
yeah, that too.
Get addicted to them.
Yeah.
Specifically, your homework is to get addicted to drugs.
Yeah, if I only abuse the drugs without developing a crippling chemical addiction, it's only partial credit.
Speaking of drugs, did you guys see that news story where an elderly woman only had like a few hours to live and her husband took her home? They did meth and they fucked while listening to Slayer.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Talking about
I did not. That's hilarious.
I mean, big respect on that.
Yeah,
who's that?
Just some old couple.
Just some random old couple you just yeah. came across in it's the not, wild.
I think they came across each know, other I think is the implication of that story.
Christ, this man is amazing.
I would really like it if that was their first time listening to Slayer.
It could
this
have
is
been.
Really good. We spent our whole life listening to jazz when we could have been listening to Slayer.
I mean, if you've seen pictures of the guy because he got arrested for all this, then it would. Yeah, I definitely would say probably a Slayer fan.
What, the meth fucker got arrested?
Yeah, he did.
The whole story. He got arrested for doing the meth, I guess.
I think I don't really know the details of the arrest, but there was an arrest involved for sure.
Yeah.
See, I feel almost kind of bad about that. That's it, like he was living his best life and then he got arrested. That's why I think I'm missing context or something. But otherwise I'm like, hey, he's having a good time.
Well, whatever. I think when somebody's dying, you're not supposed to just take them out of the hospital.
Oh, that's the
I'm
problem.
Sorry. I'm sorry, sir. Yeah. You're under arrest for being too cool. You have
there's
to come
that
to
too, yeah.
house immediately.
Yeah.
Too cool.
Exactly.
Don't let nobody tell you no different.
All right. So anyway, we got a couple of games to talk about tonight. Should we dive into reviews?
Let's do it.
Give me just a minute. I'm going to go switch on another light.
Good thing you're not first or anything. Oh, wait, she is.
She's wrong. She's eating us.
Do 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 do. Aki gonna do stuff. Do, 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 do.
I'm back.
All right. First game to talk about tonight is Steel Seed, developed by Storm in a Teacup, published by ES Digital, released April 22nd on Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $39.99. Steel Seed is a single-player stealth action adventure game set in a dark sci-fi world. In her epic journey inside a hostile underground facility run by AI, Zoe is alone with Kobe, a flying drone, as her only companion. Aki, what is going on in Steel Seed?
Fuck all if I know. In this, you play as a young woman who has been reassembled as part robot, part person, it appears. And the world has ended as she, I assume, at one point knew it. A little robot is now her little guide to help her figure out this crazy fucked up world. And, you very quickly find yourself to this giant, naked, golden AI person. Think Dr. Manhattan, but golden instead of blue. And he tells you, your father's mind, just like yours, has been uploaded and archived. Except for his is, in some reason, in four different parts. Now it's up to you to go collect those parts to reassemble him, bring him back, so that humans can come back to the world. You end up doing a whole bunch of platforming, and also fighting some little robots that don't like you being there. There's six different types of robots that you end up fighting, and I know that because later on, to gain a skill, you have to hack into every last one of them, and there's only six. So, yay!
Yay!
throughout the entire area, you can either choose to get, you know, up close and personal and just decide, hey, let's go loud and proud and run up to enemies and just batter them senseless. Or you can do what the game clearly wants you to do, and you can stealth your way through it. When you're stealthing, enemies don't see you as easily, though at a certain distance they see you no matter what. There are little glitchy areas that you can hide in. They are always on the ground, and you can see it's kind of like a blue mist coming off of them. And when you crouch in it, anything that's crouched in there or laying down in the instance of an enemy you've killed turns invisible. It's fantastic. Other than that, you're walking up behind them and stealth killing them, or you're getting into a fight with them. Your little robot can shoot things. Its gun isn't particularly powerful, and you can stab a motherfucker, which is great. The enemies you end up fighting are all controlled by this bad guy named Hugo. He's another robot, and he apparently wants to destroy the humans. And since you're trying to bring them back, you're enemy number one. And yeah, there's four different sections, five different sections technically, in this game, each with a whole bunch of checkpoints in it that are all fast travel points. There's four of them because there's four pieces of your father's data that you had to find, and then the fifth one is the little hub area where you bring those parts to. Each area is pretty long. There are collectibles in each area, and thankfully, each checkpoint is listed with how many collectibles are in it and what kind they are, though they're just pictures, so yay! Have fun figuring out what any of those pictures are, because I haven't. And yeah, most of the achievements for this are stuff like collect everything. That's like half the achievements right there out of the 42 of them.
You know who just earned an achievement?
Not me.
Jordan did, for subbing for the 16th month. Thank you, Jordan. Always appreciate having you here. Appreciate your support. Enjoy all the kitty cat emotes.
Yeah, I. Talking about kitties. There, you unlock outfits for yourself and for QB, which is your little robot companion. You have to buy them with the same upgrade points that you buy your upgrades with. And one of those is a purple cat outfit for your character. So we now know what my character has been wearing since the moment that was unlocked. And the way to unlock that is you have to break 100 boxes. So that was funny. Your character has 3 upgrade trees, and killing enemies gives you points that you can use to upgrade them. Thankfully, it's not like, oh, your first upgrade is like 10 and the next one's 50, like in most Souls style games, because this does pull a little from Souls style games, not very much, thankfully. Instead, they all have a listed cost, and that's what their cost is forever. You only get a handful of points for killing enemies. You can also break a handful of boxes open. They'll give you a small amount of points. Most of your points are obtained by getting some of the collectibles. Once you're out of those, then it's an arduous fucking just grind. So have fun with that when you get to that point. And yeah, all of your upgrades are things like, oh, you do more damage, or here's a new tool for your arsenal. Like, you know, you can have QB shoot out this little bullet that creates a glitch zone that you can hide in, or they can shoot something that causes a sound to attract enemies, or hear something that a mine to blow them to hell, which is even better. And stuff like that. But in order to use those points to upgrade them, you actually have to unlock the ability to buy them. So this one might be, you know, hack an enemy, hack one of every type of enemy, oh, get 5 kills in 6 seconds, things like that.
Hack your face.
If you wish. And yeah, so there's 3 different trees. There's ones for combat, one for stealth, and one for your utility, which is your tools. And yeah, that's most of all there is to talk about. There is voice acting in this. It's so-so. It exists. It's very indie styled. And that's about all I have to say about it.
All right, well, it is a $40 game. What are your thoughts on Steel Seed?
I really like the game. I think 40 might be kind of pushing it. I think 30, 20 to 30 range is pretty good for it. But I think it's totally worth playing, so I'm going to go ahead and say go ahead and get it, even at that price.
All right. Moving on, next game is Mandragora, Whispers of the Witch Tree, developed by Primal Games Studio, published by Knights Peak, released April 17th on Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $39.99. Slay your way in Mandragora, Whispers of the Witch Tree, a dark fantasy action RPG. Battle monsters across an expansive story featuring 40 hours of gameplay, craft powerful upgrades for your weapons and gear, and explore the secrets of this vast ruined world. Pernell, what is Mandragora, Whispers of the Witch Tree?
Mandragora is a 2D side-scrolling adventure game, or RPG action adventure game, where you control a character referred to as the Inquisitor, the Inquisitor. And this character lives in a world where they are working beneath, you know, typical vibe. They work under a church to, you know, massacre witches because they are blasphemous against God. And eventually you come to learn the truth through a series of events, including one actively possessing you post, you know, post-sacrifice, as it were, or post-execution. But that's the story. And it's very much in the Souls realm where I didn't stick with it too hard. Though I will say I do appreciate this game more because the NPCs are more related to what you're doing in a number of ways, such as the fact that you can kind of recruit them, which I'll talk about later in the review proper. But the meat and the potatoes is the gameplay. And I feel as though the gameplay of this game and the exploration and the game itself is where it truly does manage to shine. As you're exploring the world, you encounter foes which you can attack by way... before even getting all that, damn it. Before you even start the game, before you even start to kill the things, you have to choose a starting class. In this game, starting classes actively determine how you will start out playing the game, because the starting classes, of which there are six of them, give you a starting loadout, starting stats, but also gives you access to a specific skill tree. The others of which you can eventually access later in the game, but it's going to be a while before you see them. So it kind of guides you in a way where once you choose a class, it's going to determine what you intend to play as. As a character, you will have your melee weapon primarily, but then in addition to that, again, based on the character or the class you choose, you may have a secondary item that will likely determine the types of skills you're able to activate. For example, I chose a class that was primarily built around magic, and primarily around magic more than anything, called the Spellbinder. Pretty spongy character, but at the same time could deal a lot of damage with magic if allowed to do so. Started with a magic crystal with no means to defend themselves, so rolling was the order of the day, except I also had very little stamina, so I ran out of energy pretty fast when I was doing that too. Can you tell I died a lot? Because that's what happened. But I do not regret my choice, because I did like the spell kit that I was earning as I played through the game. So now that I've described that, now I'll go into the game proper. As you're exploring this world, you'll come across a variety of foes that you'll be able to knock down by using either your regular attack or a number of other attacks, which you can map to the Y and B buttons. Your regular attack is coming from the X button. These abilities will primarily be built around your starting class. Sometimes you'll learn them by leveling up and getting stronger and killing a certain number of enemies. Other times you might get them by defeating certain enemies. And those skills can also be outside of your starting class, except you probably won't be using much of them, whether it's because you don't have the right totem, which you need to have a specific, you know, class unlocked to have, or it just doesn't suit your playstyle because you've been built around the one you chose. But either way, you'll be gaining new skills, which you can map to any of those three buttons. In addition to that, you will gain experience points, which you can use to level up your character at general save nodes. Think, you know, the typical Dark Souls vibe that has become quite rote lately. And you gain money also, which you can use to purchase things. Interestingly enough, in this game, money, and it's funny how, in a sense, money and gold are sort of interchangeable, but they're also not. Like, you level up by defeating enemies, but at the same time, your gold is actually no, I tell you about it, though. Your gold is separate from your experience points, but it threw me off for a while because I'm so used to playing Dark Souls games where they are the same resource, but in this game they are different. You can use your experience points / essence to do other things throughout the game, but primarily money will be used for shopping. Essence will be used for upgrading your character and maybe certain other purchases or acquisitions. As you level up at the save points, you will be able to use talent points, which can be used on your skill tree to unlock a variety of different, you know, stat buffs, which can be applied towards your character in the form of, like, I don't know, like, their attributes, but they'll eventually, like, buff up your defense or offense, or if you have weapons or items that scale to your attributes, you'll get buffs based off of that. So, unfortunately, I am the worst at this game, because whereas in Dark Souls, I was a lot better at being like, okay, well, I want to go and click this button, which will let me see what this attribute generally scales towards. In this game, you don't get so much of that. There's no button that outright explains what the attributes ties to, so you're kind of reliant on using the equipment and just looking for the symbols for the attribute and hoping that's basically how the scaling is going to work. But aside from that, you're going to be doing a little bit of trial and error to figure out what works with what. But nothing that's going to outright make the game impossible. In fact, it didn't slow me down. Instead, what it ended up doing was my usual rote thing where I just hoard all my talent points because I'm afraid to waste them on anything. And I don't use them until I feel particularly comfortable with seeing a certain thing that says, oh, this builds off of that. Just dump it all into that stat and call it a day. But yeah, that's most normal people don't do that. So don't take my word for it on how to spend your skill points. Just know they're there. You can use them to upgrade your attributes and eventually gain other abilities within the skill tree. Just don't do what I do, because that's terrible. As you run around the map and eventually fight enemies and defeat other characters and then progress the narrative, you'll also come across NPCs that you can befriend who will then travel to your main hub to support you in your adventure. Their support works around the lines of being vendors that will sell you items or weapons or runes, or they will provide you with various services such as crafting or enchanting your equipment using said runes. Or you can also spend resources that you can find in the wild in addition to just using their services to level them up and increase the abilities they can provide to you. It's worth it to you to actually engage with these NPCs and help them out whenever you can, but for the most part, just spend your goods there, use their services, and jack them up so you can use better upgraded versions of those services. I do like, I was going to eventually say at one point that one thing I liked about this game is that in addition to the regular bosses that you'll fight throughout the game, there's also mini bosses you'll fight that can be tucked away in various areas, blocking off, you know, cool items and treasure chests or alternate pathways. In other words, they're bosses that you don't necessarily even have to fight half the time, but they're there if you come across them and they are an added bit of challenge. I appreciate that. Though I'm going to use that as a differentiation for why I like this over something like a Souls game, but now remember, Souls games have little mini bosses before the big wigs too sometimes. Either way, you're going to get your ass beat regardless. So, mini boss, regular enemies, prepare for a beatdown. But just like the normal structure of these games, when you get killed, you will spawn back at your last save point that you touched. Your essence will be left on the ground to be collected if you can get back to it and claim your corpse before the enemies kill you again. You know the deal. Wash, rinse, repeat. I will say, though, that this game did grab me in a way that I didn't expect it to, because I did come at it thinking about it just being like, oh, another one of these kinds of games. But instead, I got what feels like a pretty well-crafted world. Even if the narrative was kind of rote, I did feel as though the environments I was exploring were very beautiful, engaging to look at. The music was pretty typical, but it was also music that I did not want to turn down. I did turn the TV up for it, so it does do more than just give you a bunch of ahs and oohs that I generally hate when games do that. It actually has decent background music for your exploration and adventures. Character growth is pretty nice. I also like the fact that if you're not the type to be particularly good at knowing what weapons are better than what, it does a good job of showing you on your actual like skills in the corner. It shows you how much damage the attack actually does. So remember how earlier I mentioned how like items and weapons can scale to various stats and the like? Well, if you're not sure about what particular scaling does best for you, rather than have to even break your neck to read the entirety of the of your stat sheet on the right-hand side, you can just select the weapon, go back to the main screen, and boom, you'll see how much damage the attack actually does. So then you can just base on things like how fast does the weapon swing, because then you're getting your damage per second based on just seeing how fast you can swing your weapon and how much stamina it takes for you to swing that weapon. Health potions and the like, similar to Dark Souls, you have your flask, which is recharged at stage stations, but you can also get regular healing items, and you can also get recipes cooked for you once you find the access to chefs and recipes you can buy at the stores in the game to give to said chef to give you more recipes to cook. It works. Like, you get that healing item that's a replenishment item like you're used to in those games, but it's ultimately better to use cooked items because they give you benefits in addition to just giving you the healing. So you're not going to just necessarily just rely on your reusable flask or whatnot, which I appreciate too. I do want to use other items and ways to play the game. I don't know what else I really want to say about this game aside from the fact that I did enjoy it. It works better than I would have given it credit for off the bat, and I could see this being a game that I end up playing through in its entirety before the year's out, which, if you know me well enough, you know that is a rarity for me. I'll play a game as much as I can until I get sidetracked, but then there's other games where I'll just like kind of beat my head into the wall until it's done. This is going to be one of those games, and I do recommend it.
Very nice. It is a $40 game. What is your official verdict?
I think my verdict for this game is an easy and very well deserved to buy it.
Sounds good. This one is on my wish list. I need to play it. Looks really good.
I added it to my wish list too.
What was that, Pernell?
I was like, but not before you finish Clair Obscur.
Very true. I've only put like an hour into that game because my arm hurts to play a game.
That sucks.
It sucks.
Is it feeling any better at all yet?
A little better, but it still hurts a lot.
Goddamn.
Like,
do you do the whole rice thing? Maybe that helps a little. You know, yeah, you know, it's like when you basically you like ice it and warm it up. I can't remember.
I thought what you said rice. I'm like, what the
fuck? So did I?
I did say rice. It's an acronym that means something that I don't like breaking down, but it's essentially like cooling a muscle, warming a muscle, massaging a muscle. Essentially, just kind of helping your muscle to mend instead of just letting it sit and do whatever drugs make it do.
Yeah,
I can't confirm. I've heard RICE is an acronym before, but I don't remember exactly what it stands for. But it's something they say in like workout circles.
Yep, exactly that. And I suck at remembering the actual meaning of it by breakdown. I just know that's what it refers to as a course of action. So something to consider, but mind you, get like a heating pad, slap it on there, you know, kind of let.
I got it. Rest, ice, compression, elevation.
There we go.
Nice.
There we go.
Yeah, I've been putting a cool, like, I don't want to say an ice pack because we keep it in the fridge instead of the freezer, but basically like
cool
a gel cool pack. Yeah.
I keep mine in the freezer, but I think it does the same job as long as it's cold. Yeah. The gel helps it stay cold longer.
Anyway, so, next game to talk about is Detective Dotson, developed and published by Masala Games Private Limited, released April 24th on PC for $14.99, coming soon to console. A cozy mystery game about a detective with Bollywood dreams. It's the first adventure game set in the colorful streets of India. Engage with adorable 2D creatures living in a 3D world. Find clues and solve the evidence board. With each case, a larger mystery unfolds. Dave, tell us about your time with Detective Dotson.
I will. I'm also looking at Claire Obscure Expedition 33 as assigned, and I will say this looks like a wonderful game that my ancient laptop will not run. So I'm sure it's great, but this laptop is just it's papyrus. Like that's it's literally just a bunch of stone tablets that I have to pedal to generate electricity. So that's sort of where I am in terms of my gaming rig these days. But anyway, never mind all that. Hello, everyone. It is nice to be back with another game review on SML, the Save Madagascar's Lemurs podcast. They are a flagship species, you know. In any case, I'm here to talk about Detective Dotson, a charming little side-scroller in which you play Detective Dotson, a police officer who secretly wants to be a Bollywood star. And I mean, who doesn't? Whom amongst us? As previously stated, the game is set in India, and you, as Detective Dotson, solve a series of cases by collecting clues and assembling them into a narrative that reveals who committed the offense. The cases are, generally speaking, on the level of who painted the neighbor's dog pink and whose secret admirer threatened to jump down the well. Those are two legitimate cases you have to solve. But they all feed into the game's central mystery of who killed Detective Dotson's father, which is a bit of a tonal shift. There is a mix of silly and serious here that the game does not. It doesn't seem fully intentional. I don't necessarily think the game realizes what it's doing in some respects. The controls are the standard keyboard mouse configuration. Kind of nothing out of the ordinary there. The gameplay itself is fine. You get clues by talking to people or bribing them or eavesdropping on them. And then you arrange the clues in the right order on an evidence board. Which is a pretty, I think, standard game mechanic in games like this. The evidence board part is kind of annoying because it's not always clear whether or not you have enough clues to solve a case. You can also for the purpose of bribing people, buy helpful items from shops and stalls, and you can haggle over their prices, which is fun. There's also a mechanic for earning money and hints towards solving cases by picking up garbage and throwing it away, which I thought was an interesting... There's some observations it's making about India that I'm not comfortable really elaborating on. But that one I thought was actually very funny. There are also some hidden objects. There are a bunch of mini games too that you can play, usually to generate money. There's a hidden object mini game. There's one where you play street cricket. There is one for dancing. Those are all kind of fun, although they feel very separate from the main game, like the plot itself. There isn't really any combat that I've encountered thus far. Although there is one case where you have to sneak onto a Bollywood movie set, which is really the only time the Bollywood stuff comes into play, which is unfortunate because I wanted way more of that. And the guys guarding the set will chase you until they knock you out, even if you enter a different location. So you basically just have to outrun them for the rest of the case if they catch you, which is kind of annoying. There's also a case where random people on the street are throwing bags of colored powder everywhere, which is there's a significance there I didn't quite catch. But it does get kind of annoying having to walk through that every time you want to go anywhere to like pick up clues or whatever. With all that said, the game's setting and overall aesthetic are really inviting. They went for cute pixel art graphics and very simple character design. There's a very bright color palette, which I enjoyed. I like that the gameplay area that you expands as you progress with your caseload. So you have more of the world to explore with each one. And there's a lot of depth to the level design too, which I also really like. It's like it's a mix of sort of 2D graphics and 3D backgrounds, if that makes any sense. The depth of field is really cool. I also have not really played. They're really cool. They're a big selling point. And also, I don't think I've played a game set in India. I don't know how many games there that exist that are set in India specifically. So, seeing familiar detective procedural game tropes and mechanics reflected through sort of a different cultural lens is really refreshing. I gotta say, that part was really cool. So I guess, like, to sum up here, Detective Dotson feels like a first draft, but it's a charming one. That's worth something. Casual gamers are definitely gonna like this more than, say, fans of the Frogwares detective games. Like, if you like all the super cool, like, Sherlock Holmes stuff, this probably is not going to be enough of a rigorous gameplay experience for you. But if you are a cozy gamer, then you'll probably dig it. I know the studio has plans to add more cases and sort of expand the game beyond what's available now, which is cool. And so if they can decide on what tone they want and maybe streamline some of the gameplay, I think they'll be in pretty good shape.
Very cool. Well, as it stands, it is a $15 game. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first I wanted to add...
Good job, drug addicts.
I cannot confirm or deny whether or not the developers are drug addicts.
they probably aren't. That was a joke. That is a fun sound clip that I like to play. A total non sequitur and in no way a commentary on the personal habits of the people who made this game.
Now, the people who covers the game. I
think that covers my ass pretty well, doesn't it? I've also played the game, and it does not, it doesn't have any of that Samuel Coleridge energy, so I think we're pretty safe as far as that's concerned. $15? I would say wait until it's like 10. Okay. I don't think there's enough game there for $15, but $10? Yeah, go for it.
Cool. All right. Well, Dave, that is it for you. Did you want to stick around or were you going to head out?
I'm going to head out. I desperately need a shower, so I'm going to go do that.
Sounds good. I will talk to you tomorrow for wrestling.
Hell yeah. Good night, everyone.
Have any good final night. Words?
No.
I'll just at stick least he with thought your, about it.
I'll just stick
I'm glad he did. It gave me time to come and say have a good night.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for now. I will sign off by saying have a good night, everyone.
You too, Dave.
Ow.
All right, next up, Blueprints, developed by Dogubomb, published by Raw Fury, released April 10th on Series X and S, PS5, and PC for $29.99. Welcome to Mount Holly, where every dawn unveils a new mystery. Navigate through shifting corridors and ever-changing chambers in this genre-defying strategy puzzle adventure. But will your unpredictable path lead you to the rumored Room 46? Our friend Andy Sperry covered this one, sent over a recording of his review. So Andy, take it away.
You wake up to the news of your late great uncle's passing, along with the information that the newly appointed heir to the Mount Holly Manor is none other than yourself. In the final days leading up to his death, Herbert Sinclair has named you the new owner. That is, if you can navigate the shifting rooms, changing hallways, and uncover the whispered 46th room of his mansion. That's just a piece of the story and setup for Blueprints, a newly released explorative puzzle solver by Dogubomb, published by Raw Fury. In Blueprints, you'll take the role of Simon, the nephew of Mount Holly's famous puzzle creative, and heir to what may be the last puzzle set forth to be solved in order to gain full ownership of his mansion. This is no ordinary mansion, though, as every door leads to a new room, and at the start of each day, things will start anew. Erasing the progress you've made so far, aside from any permanent progressive upgrades. At least you still have the piles of notes you've made over what may or may not be relative to anything at all. At every doorway, starting with the main entrance hall, you'll get to pick from one of three rooms. Depending on your location or distance into the manor, which is set up like a 5x9 grid, some room options may change. More on that later. This is called drafting a room, and you'll be doing a lot of it in Blueprints. Rooms come in a few main styles, but are not limited to bedrooms, hallways, green rooms, shops, and red rooms. Each room has a color code in order to quickly identify its type and bonus, which can also vary even within its own room type. For example, bedrooms give more steps to the step counter, which is basically a tracker for the distance you've gone on this run. You'll start off with 50, but a few upgrades found along the way will increase that number. That bonus, though, may only be given as you pass through the room or if you meet some other requirement. Hallways, on the other hand, are a basic room to help connect other rooms, but sometimes require keys to get through. Red rooms hinder your progress in some way. Overall, you get the idea. It's up to you to create pathways and rooms that are cohesive and blend well enough to allow you to make it to new areas of the mansion. A side note, not all rooms have four doors to move through. Most only have an entrance and an exit, which could be on any of the other three walls. If you're not careful, you'll quickly find yourself at a dead end, which means an end of run for this day and an end to current progress. The other way a run can end is by running out of steps. As I mentioned, you only get 50 steps to start each run with, but edible items and room bonuses allow for extra steps to be added to your total. Aside from extra steps, you'll also be searching for collectible items such as gems, keys, coins, and tools. Keys, which are used on locked doors and chests. Gems, which are used to draft special types of rooms. And coins, which can be used to buy more items, such as food and tools. These items can be found by completing minor puzzles within the mansion rooms or even found lying about. Some rooms even have indicators stating if there is an item in that room and how many of it, just in case you need to draft for collectibles instead of progress. Tools come in all shapes and sizes, from sledgehammers to shovels used to dig around for treasure or smash boxes, to shoes that allow for additional steps, compass, strange keys, salt shaker, and even a metal detector used to discover more treasure. There are many tools to discover, and some that even combine to create new tools. They're all extremely useful for progression and can be found or even purchased from a shop room. There are also outer rooms, branching out beyond the mansion itself. I believe there's somewhere close to 90 plus rooms to choose from, but obviously they won't all fit in the mansion. And interestingly enough, they may not appear 2 days in a row while drafting. Something you should remember on the next day. Each room sets a tone that may or may not require a second look. A family portrait set aside or decor with repeating patterns. Some rooms present math equations or riddles, color combinations and input sequences that may require a lucky draw. Or in my case, 10 plus trips through the mansion to discover a note scribbled sitting in the trash. There's a wide variety of puzzles and blueprints that offer a very unique experience while exploring. Occasionally, rooms will link together or require another room in the mansion to activate, creating even more complex puzzles as well. I advise you to pay close attention to bonuses and requirements of a specific draw in order to complete what you thought was the last piece. There is also a rich backstory hidden throughout the mansion as well. You'll uncover the story of the family Sinclair and the mansion's previous and current inhabitants. I can't say too much about this as I'm still trying to figure out that damn safe combination, but it's very compelling and I'm invested in the story. I feel as though I need to solve the next puzzle in order to find out what happens next and how it all fits together in the end. This is a well-crafted adventure, and I will say an almost perfect experience if it weren't for a few random progression designs that hinder progress in what I believe is a somewhat frustrating way. Often I would find myself doing really well, crushing puzzles and rooms, only to get to a point where I pick nothing but dead ends and rooms that didn't connect well. Even more so coming off a really good run to find a dead end 5 room deep and nothing to show for it. I think the randomness is in some ways a little too random at times and comes off as a hindrance more than anything. But it reminds you to play towards a goal, and this isn't a sprint to the finish but a long distance race. At 15 hours in, I'm finally feeling like I'm making some progress and those pieces are all starting to fit. It's like an oversized jigsaw puzzle, and I'm in it for the long haul, but it may be a turnoff for some players. That isn't to say you won't feel rewarded early on as well, as even on the first run, I felt as though I had this game figured out. The game does well at rewarding the player, and the familiar aspect to a new run presents new challenges. You are, however, getting all your multiple playthroughs in now, as I don't see much replay value once you've solved all the major puzzles. For that, I believe they've done something pretty groundbreaking in the adventure puzzle genre and provided a slower approach to the craft. Pause and think about your next move in order to solve one piece at a time. Blueprints is incredible, and I recommend you check it out for yourself. I give it high marks and could honestly go on forever about it. With roguelike room progression, interlocking puzzle rooms, and a mysterious backstory to the mansion, Blueprints is an incredible journey to get locked into by yourself or even with the help of some friends. Check my Steam. I'm probably playing it right now and highly encourage you to do the same. Love you, SML. Hope you guys are all kicking butt, and I'll see you on the next one. Peace.
Next up, Maliki, Poison of the Past, developed by Blue Banshee, published by Ankama Games, released April 22nd on Switch and PC for $29.99. Join Maliki and her wacky family in their epic battle against Poison, a fearsome plant creature that has colonized space-time. Go along on a fantastic odyssey through the ages that provides a unique mix of exploration, temporal riddles, and turn-based fights full of surprises. Chris, what is Maliki, Poison of the Past?
Hang on a second. My cat Cricket is exploring my desk, and she might mute my mic. So I'm waiting for her to kind of hop along. There you go, Cricket. Thank you. Okay, so she left a message as well, walking across my keyboard. I just put it in the schedule planning Discord because that's where I was.
Very good.
At the time of typing.
I will share it chat for everyone.
I was going to say, yeah, for those out there in podcast land, the message is CFV DD 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 DD. Thank you, Cricket.
Thank you, Cricket.
She was like laying on me, so I like had my microphone like out of that stand, like a stand-up comedian or something like that, which is very funny. And I haven't put it back yet. So, Maliki, Poison of the Past. Yes, this is, well, funny enough, all this talk of Expedition 15, I mean 33, this is an RPG that comes from France and is kind of more or less set in France. So, and this is also, I think, the second or third game in a row that I've reviewed that takes place in France. So, yeah, we're in our France era, that's for sure. Maybe we're, you know.
Oui, oui, baguette.
I was going to say, vive la révolution. That would be, that'd be a nice to see. Anyways, so. Wait, was that even French? That I don't even think that's French. Anyways, whatever. So, Maliki, this is an interesting take on a JRPG. It is actually story-wise and settings and everything based on a webcomic that's been going on for, I don't know, like 20 years, it seems. Yeah, so if you look up Maliki, you can find a website. I didn't get much information on it because the website is in French, even though a lot of the comics are in English. The FAQ is in French, and I didn't feel like translating it. So, so yeah, that's it's an established IP, is what I'm saying here. I was not aware of that until I had this game, because I'm not a webcomic person at all. In fact, I hurt the VG Cat person's feelings on Blue Sky recently, which is a whole other story. No follow-up questions. So, anyway, yeah, so this is a time-based JRPG, not JRPG, I guess FRPG. No wait. They did this for the big one, a JRPG. You know, J with a apostrophe RPG. Anyways, you play as a character called Sand, a girl called Sand, who is sucked into a strange universe where time has stopped, and everybody kind of lives. They're kind of a resistance group that call themselves a family and live within this kind of bubble that is maintained by a tree, and the bubble kind of keeps out the forces of the antagonist, which is called Poison. It's not established early in the game whether Poison is a person, an entity, or, you know, just some other kind of metaphysical thing. I'll let folks who actually play the game figure that out. In fact, a lot of things in this game is something that folks who play the game have to figure out, because the game has a lot of systems and they kind of spend most of the time explaining the wrong ones. So it's kind of funny in that sense. So the main gameplay loop is essentially exploring new areas that are unlocked by empowering the tree to expand its kind of literal circle of influence. Fighting enemies in various locations and times and such, and also doing some light gardening, where you grow plants and you know, you harvest them and you can cook them in your home, in your base, I guess you could say. But if they're going with the family metaphor, it would be your home. And then that gives you, like, your items in the game. Although the items are a little different than, like, your usual, like, potions and medicinal herbs or whatever. They're, like, kind of time-based effects. And anyway, let's not get buried in the weeds here. It's going to be very hard to not do that. So yeah, you have some light gardening, and there's also some light Zelda style action puzzle solving. That is to say, pushing around blocks to climb over them, using the different characters' different powers that involve moving things, stopping things, starting things. You know, Sand can control time. She can make things freeze or, like, go back in time slightly or forward in time slightly. And, of course, that factors into the puzzle solving. One girl can zap solid objects with her laser and move them around. So, you know, different there's different things like that when it comes to like getting to the new areas and stuff like that. And you're more or less kind of left to your own devices to figure out how to do these things, which is fine. You know, they made a whole ass Zelda game out of that, and it was it did really well. So, and then there's the combat, which is turn-based. And funny enough, this game actually has a lore-based explanation for why battles are turn-based. It's because the enemies and yourself being kind of stuck in time, there's an element of like, oh, the enemy can sometimes move and you can sometimes move, but you can't move at the same time unless you're in temporally the same location. It does complicated Back to the Future-y style explanations like that all throughout the game, so just get used to that. But I mean, it's cool. It's well written. It's just, like I said, it's dense. So, and you know, a lot of it's like, just don't think about it too hard, as far as that goes. And yeah, in the battles, there's a turn order, but the turn order can be manipulated because your main character can change time a little bit. And so like going backwards in time has one effect, going forward in time has another effect. You can line up your characters to be able to do a combo attack of some kind. Like I said, there's lots of different things like that, which I said they kind of explain, and then they just kind of leave you to it. And there's also like a cool thing where like you can kind of move the time to be at the same time as the enemy while they're trying to attack you. And then you can kind of, attack them at the same time. And then it reduces the damage and also throws them off, which is kind of cool. So yeah, there's a lot of little systems in the battles to keep it from being just a, I attack you, you attack me back kind of, you know, system. So that's kind of cool. Like I said, the main thing is like the story. It's very mysterious. It's definitely a story that will not reveal itself in the early hours. But you know, like as I understand, you get to know things pretty well by the end of it. But I did not get to the end of it. Full disclosure: I usually don't when it's a big RPG like this. The only real things I can actually one more thing that I like. So the backgrounds and characters and such, they're kind of done in a 3D chibi style. A little bit isometric, but yeah, everything's like kind of animated, everything's like constantly moving and stuff, which is pretty cool. It's a nice looking game as far as that goes. And when you're exploring kind of outside of the time spheres, like, or time trees, whatever sphere of influence, you know, I don't remember what it's officially called. It's the Tree of a Thousand Roots. I know that that's it, but again, I don't know exactly what that means. Except there is 1,000 roots to the tree, apparently. When you're outside of it walking around, like, there's a little bit of a glitch effect in some of the backgrounds and stuff. Like, everything's a simulation that's starting to break down. It's a pretty cool effect, and I appreciate that. Having said all of that stuff, does bear down on the Twitch, on the Twitch. I'm looking at Twitch right now, so it bears down on the Switch, and therefore, this game is nowhere near like an even 30 or 60 frames a second, like, you know, smoothness. It does have a little bit of chug to it. So, you know, that's, I kind of expected that just looking at the screenshots. I'm, you know, 1400 games in on the Nintendo Switch. I'm starting to be able to just see when I know a game's going to kind of run a little slower. Having said, and there's no real benefit besides, well, not even portability since there's Steam Decks. There's not really a benefit to playing this on the Switch because there's no touchscreen interface. Doesn't appear to be anything really special about it apart from that it is on Switch. So if you've got a Steam Deck or a beefy computer, this might be better as a purchase on those systems, because I've seen gameplay videos that were very smooth indeed, and I feel like those were done on an actual computer. So there you go.
All right. Well, it is a $30 game. It is on Switch and PC. So what are your thoughts?
Well, I like it enough that I definitely want to keep playing it and eventually finish it. So that's already a buy it for me. I just want to reiterate the caveat that if performance is a issue for you, which it's not going to affect the gameplay at all, because the gameplay is turn-based and or, you know, I mean, there's a little bit of clunkiness to the gardening. It's very oversimplified, but that's kind of the nature of the game, so it's not really going to... Nothing about the smoothness of the game's frame rate is going to like actually affect the gameplay. So, but just be warned that this, if you got a Steam Deck or a you know, nice modern computer that's not a daguerreotype like what Dave K was talking about earlier or whatever, yeah, then you know you might try it, or you know, check out the demo or something like that, kind of see what might work better for you. But just because at this price point, it's like that's kind of where you start to expect a little bit more performance, a little bit more of a, you know, je ne sais quoi.
All right,
so there you go.
Alrighty, moving on. Next game is Annie Last Hope, developed by Ooland Games, published by New Gamer, released April 24th, Xbox One, Series X and S, Windows Store, PS4, and PS5, for $24.99. Annie Last Hope is an HD voxel top-down shooting game set in the 90s. After a sudden invasion of unknown creatures, Annie is separated from her fiancé and embarks on a perilous journey to find him. However, what seems like a simple search soon unravels into a web of conspiracies, revealing the dark secrets hidden beneath the end of the world. Aki, what is Annie Last Hope?
Okay. In this, you play as the titular Annie, eventually. You start off playing as a man. He and his fiance, Annie, have been just enjoying the day. He's about to go off to work at the police department while she does whatever the hell she does in her free time. And then everything changes. A whole bunch of people suddenly have become zombie-like creatures and chasing everyone else. And it very quickly turns out that it's a bunch of crabs jumping on people's faces and then inserting themselves into their bodies and taking them over. It is up to the boyfriend to see Annie to safety with his infinite ammo pistol, which is fantastic. You start shooting the shit out of them and they come in droves and you just have to kite around them. You eventually get access to better guns and grenades, which are amazing. And you start coming across other monstrosities. These things don't only take over people, it appears. They also take over things like wooden planks that make up boxes of food. What? Entire monster... yeah, yeah. Uh-huh, yeah, weird shit is weird. They take over monster trucks that they use to now try and run you over as a boss fight. There is even one that apparently took over just a giant fuck-off-sized tire. I don't know. But they decided to do it for reasons. And yeah, quickly, you know, the boyfriend's taken out of the equation, and it's some time later, and now you play as Annie for the entire rest of the game. And this, you know, she's trying to survive this, you know, apocalyptic situation. The world has basically ended as these creatures have taken over a majority of people, and now she's trying to eke out a living, and she's sent off to go see if these other two people were turned into monsters or if they're alive, and to find resources, i.e. steal from these people if they're alive. If they're dead, report back to us. And hey, if you don't come back, we don't have to deal with you anymore. Win-win-win for us. And yeah, you start off with an infinite bow and arrow, and you slowly gather new weapons as you start to unravel what's happened to not just these people, but you also find that maybe your fiance is still alive and you're off to go find him because you haven't seen him since, you know, the two, you and his partner escaped with your lives from a market that he brought you to. And you haven't been able to see him since. So now you're off to go find him and save him because he protected you that day. Now it's your job to protect him, with your extreme knowledge of nothing. So you and his partner go about trying to find him, and it just leads to this big thing of intrigue where some shadow organization has decided to help these monsters take over the world because it doesn't explain that, actually, but because. So it's just because, and yeah, for some reason, they have the man who's supposed to be your husband, so, you know, you want your husband back, and hey, fuck those guys too, because they took your husband, so fuck them. And that's the story. It's a somewhat difficult game, because only your weakest, shittiest weapon has infinite ammo. All the others have a limited ammo capacity. Occasionally, the zombies will drop ammo, but not very often. Usually, a majority of your ammo is going to come because it's going to get refilled when you go to a shop. And the shops aren't super regular. You have 4 different weapons that you have equipped all at once. One is your infinite ammo item. One is some sort of rapid fire gun, being an assault rifle or an SMG. One's a big boom weapon, and one's a long range weapon. And for some reason, one of the long range weapons is a six shooter, you know, ye old Western. And that's not a long range weapon. And it's also not accurate, which means it's also very not a long range weapon. But that's what they've decided to make it. So, you know, so you have all 4 different types, and there's a handful of each type of weapon. So, like, some of your infinite ammo ones is a bow and arrow, a recurve bow, and a pistol. So every last one of those, you can equip one of any of those 3 that you want, and all of them have 2 to 4 of them that you can choose between. You buy almost all of them. Occasionally a couple of them you can find, but nearly every last one of them you buy in the shop for a large sum of money. So hopefully you're not buying a whole bunch of other stuff from the vendor, or else you may not be able to afford them all. It does look like there's more weapons. I have no idea how to fucking unlock any of them, because it looks like there's supposed to be 5 of every type of weapon, and I think I found 3 or 4 of every type of weapon, and I don't know where to get the rest of them. And yeah, there's boss fights throughout it. You know, as I've already mentioned, giant tire, entire monster truck. There's a handful of others as well. I'm not going to tell you what they all are. Go
enjoy
them. The
store page says that they are challenging and unique boss fights. Is that true?
Damn it. Yes. Everyone is very different. Only one of... I know. Give me a second. Jesus. Only one of the bosses shows up again later on in the game, and it only shows up one other time. So they're all individuals. They are definitely harder than shit. A number of the bosses took me 3, 4, 5 tries to beat. Later on, they get easier, but that's because you have stronger weapons. And I just decided to start actually using those weapons instead of hoarding that ammo. Because I figured, hey, they refill every time you go to the shop. And this is a boss. So maybe this might be the very specific time to use this shit. it's not bad. It's not bad.
All right, well, it's a $25 game. What are your thoughts?
Sure, fuck it, why not? I think it's a pretty decent little game. It's interesting at the very least. So, yeah, I think it's worth 25, sure.
Cool. All right, next up is Bionic Bay, developed by Psychoflow Studio, published by Kepler Interactive, released April 17th on PS5 and Steam for $19.99. A scientist uses a unique teleportation instrument to escape an ancient biomechanical world filled with imaginative technology, deadly traps, and hidden secrets.
Unique.
Cornell, what's Bionic Bay?
So, it's unique. Don't blame me. They're unique in it over there. I'm just trying to roll through it.
Unique-like.
So this game is a 2D platformer that combines puzzle activity and precision platforming to create what I could describe as a very fun experience, even if the plot is non-existent. It's more just a set piece to have you running through crazy, weird biomechanical worlds. Your main character is the scientist, the aforementioned scientist, who at the very beginning of the game, hell, I think it's pretty much the title screen, they just show a sequence where, you know, you're in a lab, crap goes wrong, and you end up in the Bionic Bay? I guess that's what they call it. And you're trying to figure out how to get out. And this is done over a series of stages, as in literal levels, because they have individual names and you go from level to level. You start out with nothing. You're basically able to limp and hobble and leap a little bit, like barely off the ground. White men can't jump. Yeah, that would be the epitome right here. But that changes very quickly when he walks into a bean that gives him some cool Michael Jordan sneakers. And by that, I mean he doesn't get Michael Jordan sneakers. He gets elasticity ability, so he becomes Monkey D. Luffy, but not really. It allows him to pretty much jump higher and gives him bits of ragdoll physics, which means that he's able to sustain large falls and, you know, generally just bounce off of surfaces, which he will clearly need to do. This then also imbues him with his first ability, which I will say because it's not much of a sport, since it's literally the first thing you get. It allows you to do a sort of roll and dash. So the roll is the dash, but then you jump and then you can dash again in midair to kind of just like a sort of like a angled air dash. You'll be using that quite frequently throughout this game to explore and complete these levels. You'll come across a series of traps and cool mechanisms that you need to evade or you avoid or do a number of things to engage and get away from. And you will do that with ease. And as you progress through the levels individually, you'll come across additional abilities, which will allow you to do even more things with the levels to, you know, pretty much explore them and tackle the various puzzles and challenges. It feels weird to say, do I want to spoil what any of them are? But I don't know. I'll say one more, I guess, because you also get it pretty early, but it's, to me, is when the game really opened up a lot. You get the ability to swap positions with objects that are on the map. Basically, you can press a button to punch an object, and you can do this with almost any object in the game that you come across, big or small, and you do swap with some pretty large objects. You can do this to allow yourself to swap places with an object, and you'll be doing this for quite a few different reasons as the puzzle dictates. And honestly, it's a mechanic that never really gets boring, despite the fact that you do open up a few other things in addition to that by the end of the game. The puzzle, the swap mechanic, I'm always a fan of using that kind of thing in a game, and they do it to great effect in this title as well. Even though there's no clock on display in their main game, the game is clearly built with speedrunners in mind because there is also a Bionic Bay Online option that you can select. And on there is a sort of like a speedrunning section, or not section, but it's pretty much the entire thing, where they'll show the name of a level, and they'll show like the top times for that level, and you are welcome to challenge that level as well to see if you can beat those times. So I can see a lot of people coming at this thing to see who can be the top dog on a speed listing. I don't know if it does it by friend, because I'm pretty sure I'm the only one in my friends list that owns this game, which is fine by me because I'm enjoying it. But with that said, I do feel as though a lot of people could stand to get a lot of benefit from playing this game. I also need to mention the fact that this is one of those games where you will die a lot, maybe not as much as, say, Super Meat Boy, but you will die a lot as you try to figure out certain areas of the game, where are you allowed to fall at, where are you not allowed to fall. Oh, this object explodes. I had no idea it did that. Crap. Oh, crap, there's a laser that just mysteriously falls and I run under it. No one told me that was going to happen. Death, death. That's going to happen a lot. But it does that thing where they respawn you pretty quickly. The checkpoints are really far away from where you died at. So it's pretty much right back into the action. So if anything, I feel like the game by design is meant to be, you know, experience it for what it is. You'll get stuck a few times, but never for very long. And nothing that's going to keep you, you know, landlocked on the area. But experience the game in its entirety, but then come back for that speed running if that's your cup of tea. If it's not your cup of tea, though, I do believe just experiencing the game in its initial run is also worth its weight in gold, because sometimes you just want a tight, fun platforming experience, even if you're not like going to replay it multiple times over. And I think this game is worth that one-time experience at the minimum.
Cool. Sounds good. It's a $20 game. Your official verdict on Bionic Bay.
I think it's kind of nice. I had two games tonight, and they're both buys. But yes, Bionic Bay is also a buy it. Check it out like a book.
Very good. Now, I did want to clarify, there's actually two development teams on this one. Psychoflow Studio, a two-man company from Taiwan, and Murina, a solo dev from Finland who handled all the art and design. So this game is three people.
Well, I love that it's called Psychoflow because, yeah, the flow was definitely there. There are a number of sections in the game where I kind of just tried to blitz it to see how well I could do before getting stopped by something that would catch me, like, you know, a surprise laser or brick or something. And during the periods where I could keep the momentum going, I definitely felt the flow state in my ability and my movement throughout the level, my traversal throughout the level. So Psychoflow is a fantastic name for this developer, given the circumstances and given what they developed in this product here.
Nice. All right, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Amelia's Garden, developed and published by Red Deer Games, released April 16th on Xbox One and Series X and S for $9.99. Turn this empty rooftop into your own green corner in the city, glue together colorful pots, plant various seeds, and share your harvest with friends in Amelia's Garden. Aki, what is this?
Okay, and this, you're basically fixing pottery. So open up a pot and you see pieces all around it, and you're treating it like a jigsaw puzzle, and you're just putting pieces in there. Once the pot is fixed, it moves on to the next stage because you're growing stuff in these broken ass pots. So a bunch of dirt shows up and you just click on it and drag and drop it into the bowl a couple times until it's filled up, and then you grab a thing of seeds and you shake it up and down, and that's one of the most irritating things in the entire game, because it only has a little section where you can shake it, and you're trying to do it with a controller, and, you know, that just doesn't work very well. And then after the seeds are in there, you water it, and then you get the sun. And you have to make sure the sun doesn't blow the pot into fragments. I never had that happen, so it's very easy to avoid that. And then once that's done, you harvest things from it. And that's it. And it's all basically just clicking things and doing other basic stuff. Like, putting the jigsaw together is just click a piece, hit the shoulder buttons if you need to rotate them, and drag it over where it goes, and click A again to release it. The end. For the water, to water the plants, you click on the water thing, you drag it over in front of the plants, and you hold it there until it's used up enough water, and then it automatically moves on to the next section. That's all these little things are. After you've done that and you've harvested it, then you can go over to the far right-hand side of the screen, and there's a little waterfall thingy that you can click on, and in there are pictures of what I assume is the dev team, and you click on the harvested items, they pop over to the dev team, I guess feeding them more or less, and then you get an achievement for each one of the dev team that you fully feed.
Nice.
Yep, It takes 20 harvested plants to do that, and there's 20 pots to do it with, so have fun. It's all very simple. It took me, like, 2 or 3 hours to finish, and that's because I was doing other stuff while I was playing the game. So, this is not going to take you very long to do. It's a pretty simple base game. Have at thee. If you're an achievement hunter, this is for you. If you're a child, this is for you. If you're anyone else, probably not for you, because it's probably a little... There we go. That's all there is to say about it.
Cool. $10, what do you think?
Go for it. Especially if you're an achievement hunter or you have kids. If you don't have kids and you're not an achievement hunter, this will probably be a pass for you, but, you know, the rest of us, go for it. It's simple enough. It's a good waste of a couple hours.
Cool. Looks cute. So.
Yeah.
All right. That is it for this episode. We made it through. Thanks to all of y'all for being here, hanging out, keep me company. Big thanks for Dave for coming on, doing his thing. Music this episode, we reviewed Bionic Bay, so how about we play something from Bionic Commando?
Wait a minute. That's not good. Is there a water level in Bionic Commando? Play that. There are no water levels in Bionic. But there should be.
I just have a bunch of songs from Bionic Commando from OC Remix. I was going to play one of them.
Oh, well, they're fantastic, so do it.
Yeah.
Do it.
All right, does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Unique.
Fucking damn it.
Unique.